Yeah, it's really good. My wife's loving it. She's the one who's having a hard time.
Oh. You just put this near you. Like a digital thing.
Yeah. Oh, it records too?
Yeah, it records.
Nice. Hello. Hello. That's awesome. See, that's something, that's my new thing right now.
What?
Is I think for Christmas I'm going to give myself a nice video camera that's quality to take with me to all my new, like I've won an award in Italy.
Oh, which one?
It's, I forget what it is. It's like a best actor breakthrough of some sort.
Okay.
So they're paying a trip for me for 1 week to go to the Isle of Capri. And
that's a beautiful place. I've been there.
Oh, dude, I'm like living a dream going there. So I told my wife that, you know, I'm going to take you on a honeymoon to Italy because we haven't had it yet.
Yeah.
And then my manager phoned her and she found out that a trip made. Well, it's all about the influence that Clint is as a person. He not only influences you as an actor, but one of the reasons why I'm watching the way I eat and I'm training and fine-tuning myself is that just comes from Clint. Being around his persona, watching that he's in the gym every day. It doesn't matter what time he's off work, whatever, he's in the gym.
He's in the what?
He's in the gym.
Oh, really?
He's working out.
He looks pretty good.
8 o'clock or 10 o'clock, whatever. He has to be in there and he has a routine that works good for him.
Hmm.
I've watched Barry Pepper try to do his program. Couldn't do it. It's too heavy.
Too much weight?
Too much weight.
Really?
Just, it's too much.
Does he curl? What does he
curls, does back, does legs, shoulders. Like, he has this routine that he sticks to. And also,
does he do it at his home or at the studio?
He does it. When we're working, he has these barbell system that he comes out of his big bus and he does curls. And he's like, "All right, let's get ready to go." You know, so he's in constant in this like perfect mode of life that he's living. That I think you only get at age, you know? And I love reading people and responding from them. So I definitely said, I'm taking that and I'm living that.
Mm.
And this is where I'm at now. Slowly but surely I'll get to him. Now, as an actor, I've never been around the persona. Around someone so influential. When you meet him, he's like, "How you doing, Adam?" You come to realize this guy has affected your life in many ways that you don't even know. And you just want to, out of heart, out of experience, but out of respect, to give him your best. What is it? I don't know. I've never attempted to get at my best. So when you're surrounded by that, you're automatically day one. Even with all the actors, we're all like, okay, we all know he doesn't rehearse. We all know he just one take. Do we rehearse at the hotel? Does anybody want to get together? Like, everybody was in a flux of, we have to give him the best. Like, it's just brought into it. But what I found is the reason why he allows you to breathe, but allows you to understand the one take wonder, is because that one take is probably gonna allow you to find things that you never knew existed in preparing. That's just there, a little twitch or a little what do you think? That little subtlety, those are what he wants to find. So after 2 weeks you realize, oh, I get it now. It's your own internal rhythm that you're finding. And it does take a couple of weeks to get that rhythm with an ensemble cast. And when it's there, oh my God, it's like from day one I told Barry Pepper, I said, "Barry, you're my leader. So I want you from day one to go to Clint, tell me the shots, what is going on. I don't want to know, I want to know it from you. Because I want that when I hear your voice and you're my leader, it's not Clint that I'm hearing, it's you. So I'm responding to you." So it's almost this buildup of of everybody doing their homework before we go on. And that one take, it works magic. The one take works magic. Because you come in and you realize, all right, what can I naturally give? What is that thought? So you listen harder, you think harder, and you just allow yourself to go. And I've never, it's the first time I actually felt myself breathe. You know?
So you didn't feel yourself breathe with John Woo?
No, I was more of learning. When I was with John Woo, I was going to school. I wasn't adapted to what I know now. Like, I feel the confidence that I'm an actor now. When I did John Woo, it was like I was in awe of Nick, of John, of Christian Slater, and I knew that I was going to school. And when I got into the war scenes, I was like, holy smokes. And John was looking at me, and he knew I was shell-shocked. Like, it was too much. Too much. Everything. So he flew down a friend of mine, Cameron Zor, who's an acting coach, to come down and tell Adam, slow down, stop. It's too big. So I sat with Cameron, and he said, Adam, you know, you're doing too much. John Woo wants you to just think. He wants you to be the eye. And I was like, oh. So it was a learning process. And I think that prepped me up to this movie, because I felt like a veteran. I did a World War II film. All the actors didn't. Me and Barry were ahead of each other. Huh? And Neil McDonough did it, and I had a brother. So there was this seniority that we brought. And they would ask, so how was it, you know, and you felt a veteran. And it just brought myself into, like, yeah, I'm ready. Give me it all, you know?
I never really understood the, I never heard it from anybody, exactly the sequence. Was it Iceland and then back here? Was that how it worked? Was Iceland first?
Iceland was first. We did a day, I think, in, it was in Washington.
Okay.
The scene where we see the big mural, and then Ira Hayes walks away. You never see him, you know? And then the second day was, we all flew to Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good doing that scene in Washington. It's like, he had this way of shooting the film that really reflected the character. Number one, I didn't know Ryan and Jesse so well. So Ira Hayes, I just had no connection with them, you know? So it paid tribute to Ira, was so distant at the end that the connection they had was lost. And then we flew to Iceland to come together.
What I was thinking about is that, you know, Ira's dad, he got drafted.
Yeah.
It's in the film, isn't it? He said, you know, do your people, your tribe, your neighborhood, whatever, your community. Do them the honor of, you know, being a good warrior, a good soldier, a good fighter, someone who does not, you know, do anything, just the honorable thing. And obviously he's a respected combat guy, but it wasn't terribly honorable to be getting squashed on the tour.
Yeah.
So there had to be that, you know, this is not something my father would probably approve of.
Yeah.
So all that turbulence in the poor guy, I just really felt sadly for him, because it seemed like it was maybe coming from a family where, you know, my dad was an alcoholic. He got went to program back in my teens, but he had a problem. My grandpa. So I thought maybe Ira just had it in him congenitally. It just was part of his makeup. What did you
What I found about Ira was that, number one, he was a very patriotic man. He believed in fighting for his country. He had this this loyalty to his friends that he didn't speak about, but was there. And when he did say something, it really meant something. Like when me and my friends hang out, I have a loyalty for my friends. And I'm not that rambunctious. anxious. I get spurts of energy, but I listen to everybody. I'm quiet and I kind of keep out of spaces of my friends, other lovers, you know? So there's a shared feeling of respect. And with Ira, he wore his emotions on his sleeve. So you get this, if Ira's going to do something, it's going to be in part. And if he doesn't like something, he doesn't really care what you say. He's going to tell you. Like, this is a farce. Like, why the fuck are we here doing this? You know? And the reason that Stephen, when he says, I'm out of here, and he leaves, the thing that comes back is that patriotism for his country. His duty to be that Marine, that soldier. And that was the whole conflict that I found that Ira has, was he saw another side to the war that exists. And he didn't want to do it, but as the honor for fighting for his country, he had to. And he knew it was only for 3 months. And he was happy that he was shipped back.
I didn't know that they were told that it was only a 3-month tour, the bond tour.
Yeah, yeah. It was not that long, and they raised $23 billion. And what sucks is that you see these men, after they served and gave the country this regained source of finances, that these three men ultimately went, like Rene Gagnon, which couldn't get a job, was a janitor. It's like, isn't there a portion of that funding that could go to help out these guys? Out of $23 billion, you can't even say, okay, here's a house for you? It's like, what's going on with that, you know?
Yeah, I didn't quite get that from the film. Why did they all go cold on poor Rene Gagnon? He wanted to actually take advantage of some of those offers that were thrown at him.
We live in a life where there's this fame that exists, and for a moment of excitement, you're number one, but it only lasts for like 3 months, you know what I mean? And he still had to deal with the war and his family. So when it came around to feel to get those recognition back, they were gone. People are out there to feed in the excitement of now. They're only after what's going to benefit them now, you know. And it's hard to find loyalty. It's hard to find that. You know, my word is my honor, my word is my bond, you know? That's why everybody loves it. When you're in the military, and I learned this from Wind Talkers, that loyalty is so strong, it's nowhere else. Amongst the best friend, yes. But they tell you, we got your back. We will support you, you know? Yeah.
But again, the thing I was mentioning about alcoholism, was it in his family at all? Was he just doomed because he had a gene?
Well, I think Ira was just doomed right from the start for being someone who was so honest, emotional, and loyal. And when you are that full of love for what you're doing, and your family, your friends die in front of you, and then the war you believe in is introduced to him as a propaganda, and he's used in that. When you fall into that, there's no way to hide the emotion but to go to alcohol. There was no drugs available. There was no therapy available. It was like, thank you, see you later, you're on your own. And when you have this turmoil and you go to reality again and you deal with a normal life and family of love, it's like, you know, they don't get what you're feeling. And me, just being the actor, I was crying that night. I'd go see my wife, and she'd look at me and understand not to talk to me because I was carrying so much fucking emotion that it was... I can't understand how he would have lived without alcohol. Because I remember on my first divorce, like, after a week, I was like, I can't deal with this. And I went to numb it through a few drinks. Hey, yeah, I'm partying with friends, you know? But it's like that emotion, people don't understand. The therapy wasn't available. That he was
That such was thing as post-traumatic stress.
No.
I mean, that term, I don't believe, until after Vietnam, right?
Yeah. And you understand, a lot of these veterans went to alcohol. A lot of these veterans now don't want to deal with that emotion. You know? It's really hard, man. I felt like my grandma passed away in the middle of the filming. And I was doing the scene when I was hitchhiking. And it was the first time that I was like, oh my God, this is what Ira must have carried as a partial burden. Because that was my grandma, considering the people that he fought with had to die and how much burden he had to carry.
In actuality, when Ira came to tell, I've not forgotten the name.
Harlan Bluff. Bluff.
His father.
Father, yeah.
Well, and he walked up to me and tells him that, you know, this thing. Did he really turn around and leave after he saw it?
Yes.
Why did he want to have a cup of coffee or something? It just seems so, you know, brusque.
I don't know. I think maybe it was like a cultural thing or just a guilt thing that he had to get out of there and walk away and cry. Because when I was in those shoes, this emotion of just sensing what he might have been through and thought about, it was a huge burden for him to allow that to go that long. But by the propaganda and the having told what to do, that kind of turned him to hide that.
Right.
And for him to go that, that's who Ira was. That's why that feeling that when you watch and see Ira go through that trek, you feel him. Because that's who he is. The man of respect, loyalty, the honor for Harlan, to let him rest in peace for his family. That's who he was, and we lack that now, you know what I mean? A lot of people don't value what was back in the 40s, you know? There was a lifestyle and a respect that was there, you know?
My old man was at age, right?
Wow, I give you lots of love, man.
He's a second lieutenant Marines, or regular lieutenant, I forget which one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he told me that instead of water, it's only about, I don't know how south it is, Japan, but it was February, March, and it was 650 miles south, not that far south.
Yeah.
It was too cold to go swimming. Wow. We all went swimming after a lot of the battles in the South Pacific, but nobody wanted to go swimming in Iwo Jima because it was too cold.
Yeah.
So I was saying that to somebody. Why did they, it didn't seem like, oh yeah, I mentioned that to the author of the book at the press conference. All I can tell you is that they went swimming, I was told.
Dude, you should, man. Please. Just have
I feel like I've got this, you know, your example, like Clint's example came to me, your example came to me. I just can't do it.
Well, a salad and a chicken is the perfect meal.
Yeah,
just get a salad and chicken.
Okay, I'd like to have a nice
chicken salad.
Chinese chicken, or would you like Caesar salad? Chinese chicken, not Caesar salad.
Yeah, the chicken. Chinese chicken.
Chinese chicken.
Yeah.
I'll get that for you.
Thank you.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, when you...
You were swimming off Iceland, right?
We were swimming off Los Angeles. He made it to the point that was going to be...
Okay.
Our last scene, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, she'd literally be the last thing I got. Okay. So, one thing that I was thinking of right away is that my old man said that when everybody was really swimming after a battle, everybody would just basically go skinny dipping. We gave a shit, you know? And I was wondering, why are you wearing the underwear? Are they modest? They don't want to...
What
was that about?
I don't know what it was. I think it was all our choices of what we thought. And
you think you get an R rating?
No. Jesse Bradford was the one who stripped down to his shorts, and you don't see it on the screen.
Okay.
But I don't know.
I can't remember, by the way. What is a fine love rating?
I don't know. I think.
I mean, the rating on the movie is what? You say there's a rating called 14?
I think it's 14 plus, yeah.
So that's not R.
Yeah.
It's like PG-13, PG-14?
Yeah, it's kind of like more teenagers, adults, kind of.
Oh, another Chinese film. Again, this is not your issue.
No, that's cool.
But he said that, you know, everybody wore OG underwear.
Yeah.
It was a law because, you know, the white underwear, if you take them off, you can't see that. It's like,
yeah.
Fun. Anybody had any white underwear on?
No, we had our OG wear.
Oh, it looks white.
Yeah. It was, I think it's the tint of the film that makes it white.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's solved.
Yeah.
So it was OG. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Oh, we wore the whole.
All right.
The whole thing. Because we felt that we owed that, you know? Because our first day, it was cold in Iceland, and we were going to be in the water, and some of us tried on a wetsuit because we might have fell or what, you know? And we put them on, and we're like, what are we doing? You know, if we're going to freeze, let's owe it to these fuckers. You know what I mean? Let's do it. And we decided we're going all the way into this, you know? Yeah.
This is something I was thinking about when the film was about to come out. I was wondering if I could see, just out of curiosity, just to see what that Tony Curtis film, how that plays.
Oh,
I never found it. Did you ever?
Yeah, I saw parts of it. I didn't watch all of it because I didn't want to go into what they did in that film. But I saw Tony Curtis and he did a good job.
Okay. It's kind of funny by today's standards, you know, that like Tony Curtis playing in Native America.
Well, the thing that I think Tony didn't see was just that I honestly could feel is just the inner turmoil. Being Native American, understanding the racism of that era, understanding, you know, it's tough being Native American, you know, especially in Hollywood too. So there's this inner Pandora box that just wants to explode.
Mm-hmm.
For Tony Curtis, he was exploding. He was like, you know what I mean? Letting it out.
Accent? Did he sound right to you?
No, he sounded okay for, you know, 40s film, you know, for the films of that era.
It was like 61.
Yeah. So it was. He sounded okay. And I think with Ira, he just carried so much that he never exploded. You know, it's just that's who he was. He wasn't gonna be a weak man. You know, and I talked to his family. They came and seen the screening in Arizona that I had for them.
Whose family? Ira
Hayes' family, and his brother was there.
Where in Arizona?
Scottsdale. And after the movie, they said, "Thank you. Now we understand him a lot better because he never spoke. He never talked about the war, and we now know why he didn't, because of the horrors of the war." And I'm proud to give them that, you know.
I've forgotten what year it was when he passed.
He was 32, so 40s.
So probably the 50s or something?
Yeah, something like that. 24. So something like 10 years after.
10 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any happiness, anything that he was nurturing? Did he have a good run at all?
Yeah.
Job for a while to get married. Did anything happen?
No, I think he went on a decline through that, and was, you know, trying to connect with certain family and friends, but just, you know, what the war did to him scarred him for life.
Did he actually, by the way, return to the Pacific Theater and combat after the tour? tour.
Yeah, you know, after the tour, they sent him back.
What happened after the interview? I can't remember. What was the next battle?
There's another one. I don't know where it was, but after that was it. Like what they did, what happened at Iwo Jima really settled the score for everything, and the amount of money they raised settled the whole bankruptcy that they were going into. You know.
I always thought that, you know, it's another thing I learned from this film. I didn't know about any of the bankruptcy. I didn't know about the economic problems of the government. I didn't know that the war thing ever was a separate thing. So it's really kind of educational.
For me, it's just an important way of telling a story to let people know that it's time we educate people of our stories.
Did you, by the way, have a chance, Adam, to speak to Bradley, the author of the book?
That's the best part of being part of this film, was I didn't have to do research. I didn't have to go into detail of Ira, because it was all in James Bradley's voice, his eyes, his heart. And that's what I wanted to give. And also just give to James Bradley. It's like, this is how much you feel. When he talks about Ira, he nearly cries because his dad, would only use the word respect for Ira.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else. And he'd say, why would he do that? Just for Ira. Why is Ira getting this love? There's something about him that everybody loves. What is it? And that was for me to try to find out, you know?
You know, Bradley, right here in this hotel, in front of the press corps, I was there for the press conference in the back. Before Clint came in, someone asked him to talk about Ira. He did the same thing. He paused, and I could see he was struggling with that emotional memory.
Mm-hmm.
And just because somebody asked him, it's a pretty strong reaction.
Yeah. Well, he talks about how he went door to door. Finding about Ira. And when he talks about that, you can just see that so many people respect him. You know?
Can you tell me where Ira was buried? Was he buried in not D.C.? Veteran, or was it back home?
I think I was talking to somebody in D.C. that wanted me to go to the burial over there. I don't know if it was him.
Uh-huh.
So no, I don't. I got when I'm done all this press tour junket, which ends in February, I'm gonna go spend some time with Iris family and do my part of coming, you know, to go and really find out those places of Ireland.
Now, you say, do they actually live in Scottsdale, John?
Yeah, they live outside. They live at the Gila Reservation. They still live where I was from. Yeah.
Is that where you passed? Near Scottsdale?
Yeah.
By the example, if you will, of remember Dustin Hoffman did so well for a graduate.
Yeah.
You figure, okay, what am I going to do next? Make a big impact on people pay attention to. He decided, got to go to the opposite side and play Rats Over Israel.
Yeah.
How are you?
Thank you.
Are you Chinese chicken sauna for you?
That was good.
Yeah.
Fresh ground pepper?
That would be nice, thank you. So, by the same token, have you thought about doing something very un-Ira-like, something spritzy, a comedy, something that's just not about change and hurt and,
the biggest thing I learned on this film, and Clint and all the guys, is honesty. Is you have to, in this this field, given off the trail.
Right.
So I guess what I'm trying to find out there now is to give out an expression of honesty. And it's kind of I just did this HBO movie where I played Charles Eastman, who's a young Lakota doctor after the Wounded Knee massacre, came back to help out establish the reservation. And there's this rhythm and dialogue and fluidity that they used to talk back then that was so difficult for me to do. And
when I think of Wounded Knee Massacre, I think of the 70s. Am I wrong?
That's the second. Where they fought and stood for their rights.
Sorry.
But this is the original where they just killed everybody.
And well, I guess what I'm thinking, Adam, is that you have a good. There's a warmth to you. There's a, you're not a, you know, you're there's a fluidity to your emotional feeling. And it's just that we're much more of a multicultural nation today.
Yes.
And, so I think it's kind of beyond having Native Americans play Native Americans. I think it's kind of like the Native American guy, the guy next door, kind of falls in love with a girl who's pregnant. And, one of those stories.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be, that thing. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
am I right or am I wrong? Or that, just trying to gauge where things are in the industry.
Well, I've come into a position where there were few films where I could have played into that role, but at the time they just weren't ready to say it was okay for me to be Indian, But I think now with this film, just from me and my meetings and talking to people, that they are saying yes, they're ready, So I think people are now going to see me playing that romantic guy. I still will do the emotional stuff because there's a lot to be said with, expressing for people certain emotions. I have a Canadian TV show called Moose TV, and it's a comedy. And I play this. It's coming out next year. Hopefully, an American distributor will, a network will pick it up.
It's been produced by Canadian Broadcasting or by a Canadian-based production company?
Yeah, it's a Canadian native-based company called Resolution Films.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the lead, and I play this very absurd, out-there guy who's just optimistic about everything. And his choices of creating this TV show is just odd. Like one of the characters is Joan Little Bear. I think it's Joan Little Bear and her pet beaver. The beaver. So it's just that absurdity, but the character I play is really just optimistic and energetic. Hey guys, you're watching the show, come down. Let's start an audition process, Tell me your ideas. It's really big. And you could tell that people are like, this isn't going to work. And he's like, no, it is. We're going to have the biggest show in the world, So
Moose TV is called?
Moose TV. So a lot of people are going to be introduced to that. Now, my goal right now that I'm trying to figure out with my manager and my agent is how can I step into the commercial side of things, where the decisions are made through star power, through talent and chemistry, but getting that big, the new big studio movie. Like, you know, maybe Batman or the new Iron Man or the next Superman. Like, how can I slide into these films? Like, I'm not going to do anything that's not good. But I love the aspect of, who knows, maybe I can do a film that's like Rush Hour. It's a hit where you mix cultural diversity, you know what I mean? And show
that's
that.
What I was thinking, just playing good, intriguing, lively, maybe funny, maybe dramatic, but just stuff that's just good.
Yeah. Well, the next film I'm doing is with a buddy of mine. He wrote this film where I play a hitman trying to uncover a counterfeit deal.
Mm-hmm.
Gone bad, and it's playing to the genre of that hitman movie style action, but the dialogue of what does money mean to us has a little twist, but we're trying to fit in to say yes, this has been done before, but we're giving it a little twist. Showing what Adam can do, introducing some new actors that are coming out who are amazing. And my friend who's this director, Adrian Langley, amazing. And he's going to bring in his little touch, and everybody's going to be like, wow, now that was something I like.
And
you know,
you're all funded up from a production company?
Well, the money is, I'm trying to get Indian Gaming involved. My buddy Adrian has some friends who are about to make a decision. So we want to shoot it like in March.
Is this something that, when it turns out, it'll be seen as a kind of entertainment genre film, or is it something that might show up at Sundance, or what kind of
thing? Oh, it'll definitely show up at Sundance. It has that appeal of the underdog, the independent take to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we just want to prove that you can make quality kick-ass films with $1 million budget, you know? And that's what we want to prove, that, you know, yes, you're capable of doing that, but also we're writing some films that, you know, need the bigger budget.
You mean you and the director, your friend?
Yeah, we've kind of created this chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
He has this great concept where I play a bomb expert, where, you know, I'm trying to solve this guy planted a bomb in the city, and I have to solve what it is.
You said Langley, right?
Langley, yeah.
L-A-N-G-L-E-Y?
Yes.